die before you, I'm going to come back and haunt you.
But do it nice.
I will for sure.
Okay.
Hey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hi.
I'll be like,
yeah. No, it'll be really sweet. Okay. Yeah, I'll put a calming presence over you. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll feel like soothed.
You'll love it.
I won't feel like agitated. Mm-mm. Okay. Are we recording?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Hi. Welcome.
Hi.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Yay. Mm-mm-mm. How's that?
Oh, that's so yummy.
Isn't that so good?
Yeah. What is this called?
Paloma.
Paloma. I think, I've had this before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy October 8th.
Oh. So close. Halloween.
I know. Oops. Love it.
Love that. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Cocktails and Conspiracies.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Tessie.
So,
I'm really
because
excited
it's
about this
spooky
one.
Month, we're trying to do some spooky stories.
Love it.
What are we doing today?
Poisonings.
Dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm really excited. You
Me
go
too.
First.
Okay. So.
I'm really nervous, though. What's your topic? Can you give me, like, the name?
Oh, and I was going to ask you how to pronounce this, and I forgot to do that.
Uh-oh.
Julia Tofana.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. Is that how you would say this word? Julia? It's Italian.
Yeah. Yeah. Julia. It's probably the
Julia.
Italian.
Oh, duh.
Yeah.
Okay,
Julia
talk
with
it out.
A G. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Oh, and just before you get started, mine takes place in Japan. So.
Awesome.
It's going to be really hard today.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I'm in Italy. She's in Japan today. Yeah. So bear with us.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be talking about a woman by the name of Julia Tofana, who is the most successful serial killer whose name you've never heard of. I hadn't heard of her.
Same.
Right?
I'm so excited. Wow.
So Julia Tofana killed hundreds of men in 17th century Italy she turned her makeup business into a poison factory.
What?
Selling a deadly concoction called Acqua Tofana, thought to have been laced with arsenic, lead, and belladonna. And belladonna is a special ingredient that actually women back in like the Renaissance time in Italy would like put in their eyes to make their pupils dilate because they thought that looked hot.
Ew.
Yeah.
Looks scary.
I know.
Yeah.
They thought it was more becoming.
Okay.
Yeah. So Tofana made it her mission and her business to help aspiring widows murder their husbands.
Wow.
During the Renaissance.
Great mission.
Oh, right. During the Renaissance, in an era of a lot of arranged marriages that left no possibility of divorce, especially in Italy, you know, especially in Rome, all of these other places, the only way out of an unhappy union was death. Tofana was able to murder hundreds of men over the course of nearly 50 years without being caught.
And damn
girl.
I know.
There's a whole story of how she got away with it, too. It's so good.
Love it.
Until, in a shocking twist, a bowl of soup caused her downfall.
Ooh. Okay.
Right? Here we go. So let's talk about Renaissance marriages for a second.
Okay.
Just like, because this is the catalyst to this entire 50-year-old murder spree.
Yeah.
So women were often forced into marriages by their families without having a say in the matter whatsoever. Once married, husbands had complete control over their wives, and women were often completely powerless. Husbands could beat their wives without facing any punishment or subject them to all kinds of cruel treatments.
Oh, my God.
Bullshit.
Yeah, assholes.
Patriarchy.
I hate it.
Tofana provided what could be called an early Italian divorce.
Love it. An early Italian divorce. That's perfect.
For many unhappy wives. If they didn't want to enter a convent, women in Italy during that time had only three ways to make a living. They married, they begged, or they prostituted themselves. While the last two options had their own obvious shortfalls, there were many powerless married women, many of who were also at risk. Women died frequently in childbirth during that time. Women were beaten, mistreated, and powerless. And while some people just, some women just hated their husbands.
Yeah.
I mean, get it.
Hey.
Okay. So who was she? So in many ways, one of history's most prolific serial killers remains a mystery. There are no portraits of Julia that have ever been. There was like one portrait that like through the centuries, like people thought was her, but it was never like.
Yeah. Cause this is in the 1600s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Okay, here's what we know about her. She was known to be very beautiful and was very interested in apothecaries.
Cool.
She was very, very good at her craft of making like cosmetics and stuff like that.
That's so cool. I wonder what makeup looked like 500 years ago.
So they had like pressed powders.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know
and
that.
Actually, and I'll get to it. That's how it actually started. The poison started. So yeah, they had, and I know that they had like rouge and stuff. They used that belladonna to make their pupils big. I've gone down a rabbit hole looking at like cultures of beauty.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool.
It is. And how it's transformed, you know?
But you know what? At the end of the day, we're all trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Women have for centuries and centuries.
Yep.
So she was very good at her craft. She may have came by it honestly, as her mother is thought to be Tefania de Adamo. Okay. Tefania de Adamo.
De Adamo. Okay.
Yeah. It's like a D apostrophe A-D-A-M-O.
Okay.
De Adamo. Sure. Who was executed for murdering her this guy named Francis, who was either Julia's father or a later husband of her mother's.
Wow.
Which begs the question, which Julia's father an early poisoning?
Yeah. Okay, so it runs in the family.
And yeah. And she, and when she got to be, you know, so her mother was in this and like she was beautiful, young, and she was a widow too. Who, maybe this enterprise started in the family. We don't know.
I think it did.
Right. So what did she do? So during the mid-1600s, Julia sold cosmetics in southern Italy, and her special recipes for Acqua Tofana contained enough arsenic to kill without leaving a trace. Her goal was to keep her poison secret so that she could continue to sell the potent concoction.
Wow.
And here's what's so crazy. Her story was only told after her death, and her death is crazy. Not while she was alive, powerful, young, and beautiful.
Of course.
So she wasn't there to motivate like gossip, and like keep the story going. Like there's this whole level of secrecy. Like she had to operate like this because she did this for 50 years.
Wow.
And she like moved all over southern Italy. However, Julia and her family did add to the general perception that women were devious and their method of killing was poison. Like that was a big, like, you know, I mean, it's Renaissance still, Italy, like women are the
known,
devil.
Yeah. And it's still known that that's a woman's choice of murder, poison.
Even Mozart, a couple centuries later, after all of this, told his wife that his impending death was probably due to being poisoned. So this is like a trope that has followed women.
Yeah.
Even to this day.
Yeah.
So like it's followed women throughout the centuries. Julia's clients were very protective of her. They only told others whom they could trust and who had the same needs. After all, if authorities found this particular merchant, not only the merchant, but the clients would swing for engaging in the transaction.
Yeah.
So how was it sold? How did it work? Acqua Tofana, like I said, was made of arsenic, lead, and belladonna. That was named after her, but it may have been a poison handed down from her mother.
Okay.
I love it.
I love it.
I freaking love it.
Cool.
Even so, Julia could still have refined it. The poison was known to be tasteless, odorless, and colorless, especially handy for mixing with wine and other liquids. Only a small amount was required to complete the poison, and the combination of ingredients masked the known symptoms of poison, such as seizures and intense pain. Thankfully, while most of the ingredients are still known, information about the proportions and the method of mixing have not survived. Because, Could you wish it did?
I know, right? I'd like to know.
Yeah. So she, at any rate, she sold it under the cover of cosmetics or as vials and have a picture of it.
Ooh.
Yeah. We'll put it on the on Instagram. Vials of manna of St. Nicholas of Bari. When it was sold in vials with the St. Nicholas label, the cover was that it was a devotional object.
Okay.
So, like, the little vial, like, the picture I have doesn't have the saint on it, but, like, that's how they were sold in, like, these little vials, right?
Yeah.
So, but her real genius was that it was completely in disguise as a typical woman's cosmetic or even religious healing oil that no husband would suspect. So, first, like I said earlier, she disguised Acqua Tofana as powdered makeup. Women could set this small container on their dressing tables next to other lotions and perfumes without raising suspicion from anyone. But her second disguise was even more ingenious. Yeah, and that's how she sold it in the small vials with the image of St. Nicholas of Bari. And the women would just put it on their vanity tables in their rooms. And husbands didn't give a crap about like how their wives got ready. So like let me show you a picture. That's what it looks like.
Oh my God, that's adorable.
Isn't that cute? It's like in a little ceramic vial and it's painted.
Beautiful.
And yeah.
I'd buy it.
Yeah. And so whenever the wife was ready, she just put a couple of drops in a glass of wine or whatever and be free of that.
Hey, honey, dick. I made you a drink.
Hey.
Hey, you've had a bad day.
Here
you go.
Special.
And then you watch him die. How long does it take?
Exactly.
I bet it's pretty quick.
I think it was damn quick. Okay. So how was she caught? So, and this is what I love even more. Continuing the family tradition, her daughter joined the business.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
So this poison cosmetic company ran for 50 years under three generations in southern Italy.
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah. And they operated quietly in Italy, moving from Palermo to Naples and then to Rome. They were eventually betrayed by a wife who put the poison in her husband's soup, then regretted it.
Sure.
This wife like stopped her husband from eating it. And he got super, super suspicious. So he forced the truth from her and then dragged his wife to the papal authorities in Rome.
Oh God.
So
I wonder if she regretted it. She's like, fuck, I should have just let him eat it.
Oh, I didn't know.
This isn't worth it.
Like, he's not grateful that I just saved his life
right.
from me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
sticky
ungrateful
situation.
Bastard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unfortunately, she was tortured by the papal authorities, and she spilled every last piece of information of what she knew. So, you'd expect that Julia would get arrested immediately, but that didn't happen. Too many locals had a stake in her remaining free, and she was warned.
Wow.
So there's a couple of versions of this story. One version of her story from that point is that she was already retired and in a country estate, and her daughter was like running the storefront and things. When she was warned, she had the opportunity to run, which she did. But then her daughter and her employees were caught and executed, and that Julia was found and garroted at a later date.
What does garroted mean?
You know, so a garrot it's a super thin piece of like metal or like string or rope. It's super, super thin, but then there's like a piece of wood and you wrap around, and if you tighten it almost decapitates you. Yeah, that was a big thing. Like,
ew.
So she was found and garroted at some other date. Fun fact, there's a ghost tour for tourists in Rome that includes the mother and daughter's apartment, where her ghost is said to call for her lost daughter from the window in the black of night.
Oh my God, that just gave me goosebumps.
I have goosebumps all over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can we go do that one day?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Field trip.
Yeah. Let's do a special epi in Rome.
Oh.
How fun.
Let's make that a long-term goal.
Yeah. Okay.
Share with 100. Your friends. Help us get to Rome. Mm-hmm. I mean, selfish, but okay. We'll make it a great episode if we do.
We promise.
So, however, the most reported and the most believed version says that while Julia was elderly, she was still in Rome when she was warned. She ran for the nearest church and demanded sanctuary, which was granted. But that's not it. There's more.
What?
So, if we were to believe the most reported story that she had sanctuary in a church, a rumor suddenly raged throughout Rome that she had poisoned the water systems in Rome.
Oh, God.
This rumor, which had suspicious beginnings to start with,
sure,
caused the church to be stormed and Julia to be extracted from it and handed over to the papal authorities. You know, like, if you're handed over to the papal authorities, like, it's all over for you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and this article, I got this story from two articles. We'll put it on there. And these are, like, kind of small, like, historical websites that were really, really cool. So, I definitely want to give them credit for it. So,
yes.
Oops, I lost my spot. Okay, so under enthusiastic torture, she confessed to poisoning over 600 men in just an 18-year span from 1633 to 1651.
600? Fuck.
But you know what? It's under papal torture. Like,
yeah.
But I think she did, let's just say she did a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure
maybe
she did.
Maybe not 600, but I mean... I think a lot. She was executed along with her daughter and three employees in July of 1659.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. They died in the Campo dei Fiori, a square that was called the Field of Flowers because it had been kept an open field for a long time in ancient Rome, but had eventually been paved over and made into a square. Then it became the location for hanging people and burning them at the stake.
Oh, my God.
Fun Field of Flowers. After Julia's execution, her body was thrown back over the wall of the church that had given her sanctuary, and the clergy there were left to dispose of it.
They just threw her body over the wall?
Yeah, apparently. God. So, like I said earlier, like, this was an age of poison in Italy, and because this was so popular, Julia had so many accomplices as well as clients. So, okay. Like, she had this huge, huge network. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's a great Rolodex.
I mean, she literally had a black book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Unfortunately, though, when she was tortured, they were also named and many were executed. Mm. Some fled, some were imprisoned, then strangled quietly in their cells. It's just sketchy as fuck over there. It's very
strangled
secret.
Quietly in their cells. How creepy.
And even more creepy, some of her accomplices were walled up and the Palazzo Pucci dungeons. While the riches of her clients were strangled quietly in prison to avoid scandal as much as possible, nobody today knows the reasoning behind who was hanged and who was walled up alive in the dungeon.
What would you rather be?
Oh, hanged.
For sure.
As quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Just don't even let me sit in the cell for a day. Like... you made the decision. I can't get out of this. Well, let's go.
Yeah, I'm done with my life.
Okay, it's over. I'm not. Oh, my God.
No.
Walled up alive. That's actually like being buried alive or being like, that's why I'll never go spelunking.
What's spelunking?
Spelunking, that's when you cave dive.
Yeah, no thanks.
Hell no.
Absolutely.
That's my
not.
Worst fear ever is being trapped alive in a place that's dark and small and I can't get out of.
Yeah, just watch Planet Earth. They'll take you through all that.
No.
Yeah.
So,
ugh.
So because Acqua Tofana was always given instruction for its use, some of Giuliana's named clients were able to avoid punishment by claiming to use it only as the cosmetic it had been supposedly sold as. So,
but they didn't get poisoned using it?
Listen.
Okay,
so sorry. Some of these women were able to successfully make this claim in spite of some accidental quote unquote deaths in their homes.
Okay.
So they were able to like say like, no, like I just use it for makeup.
Yeah.
Because it was makeup.
Yeah, right.
And this was probably for a few reasons. So belladonna, the ingredient, like I said, they use it to dilate their pupils, which was considered very alluring.
So scary looking.
And I love this article. This woman that read it, she goes, "Also, I have no doubt that very smart women could sell the idea of being very naive to very biased men if their lives depended on it."
Love it. Yeah. That's awesome.
I freaking love it. So, and the last thing that was said in this article, Julia's daughter, Girolama Spera, carried a certain fame of her own because she was part of the whole company. Her nickname was Astrologa della Lungara.
And that was her nickname? That's a long nickname.
She would doubtless have carried on the family trade of serial murder had she survived.
Wow. That's insane.
Isn't that crazy?
I love it.
I had no idea.
No idea.
I love these stories.
I do too. I'm so glad that you got that one.
Yeah.
And we didn't do the one that everyone knows. It's great.
So that's it. Belladonna.
Wow.
I know.
We've come so far. Kind of. Yeah.
In a way. But yeah. Wow. So Julia Tifana. Historical women are badass. They just didn't get – we just didn't grow up hearing any of these stories.
Of course not.
It's not all men.
No. There are crazy, awesome women too.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Oh, I just saw a commercial, and I'm not going to remember what it was called because it was, like, in passing. There's a new show coming out that, like – oh, I think it's called, like, The Last Man on Earth or something like that. It's – the premise is, like, there's only one guy left in a world of women.
Ooh.
I kind of want to watch it.
I do, too. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see what they think it would
What
happen.
Is it going to be on?
You know, I was watching like it random. I'm gonna find it.
Yeah,
but I think I want to watch it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Let's watch it.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that was great. That's perfect.
Who else is getting poisoned today?
Okay. Shit. Okay.
So excited.
I'm so excited. Okay. Let me just see how I can.
Hey, little guy, you just stay on that table.
Yeah, don't hurt me. Okay. So today I'm doing the monster with 21 faces.
Ooh, I don't even know what it is.
This is a candy-centric crime wave that struck Japan in the 80s.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I had never heard of this either. Mm-mm. So I got this from BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
BuzzFeed has some good stuff.
It does.
If you can get through the dumb quizzes and like the, you know, like.
Which Parks and Rec character are you?
Or like celebrities that I don't care about because I'm too old now.
Yeah.
If I can scroll past that, you can find some good nuggets.
Yeah. So this is a little show that they have on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah. The two guys, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the monster with 21 faces, the candy-centric crime wave that struck Japan in the 80s. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So at around 9 o'clock p.m. on March 18th, 1984, Kahatsuika Ezaki, who is the head of Japanese candy manufacturer Ezaki Glico, was enjoying his evening bath in his home in Osaka when two masked men armed with a pistol and a rifle busted in and kidnapped the naked Ezaki.
Ooh, okay. If I'm going to get kidnapped, I don't want to be naked.
I know.
Oh, that sucks.
Ugh.
The worst, vulnerable.
Naked and wet, just ugh. So the home next door belonged to Ezaki's 70-year-old mother, Yoshi, and it was located on the same property, just surrounded by like a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
So the criminals had broken into her home, tied her up with a cut telephone line, and then they retrieved the key to her son's home, which had a security system installed. That's how they were able to get in quietly. So having entered the home of Katsuika Ezaki, the two masked men tied up his wife, Mikeiko, who is 35 years old, and his eldest daughter, Mariko, who is 7 years old. Mikeiko offered the men money, and one of them responded, "Be quiet. Money is irrelevant."
Oh, no.
After cutting some telephone lines, the two masked men located Katsuika Ezaki, who was bathing with his two other children, which is kind of weird.
Mm. Were they babies?
Well, Yukiko was 4 and Etsuro was 11.
Oh.
So it's a little, but you know, yeah, Japanese culture, they might be, acceptable.
Okay.
Whatever. Katsuhiko Izaki was abducted naked from his home and taken to a warehouse in Ibaraki, Osaka. The next day, a ransom note demanded Izaki's company, Glico, turn over 1 billion yen and 100 kilograms of gold to leave at a specified phone booth.
I'm going to go bullshit on that because I thought money was irrelevant.
Right? Yeah.
You could have just gotten it done right then.
I know.
Whatever.
She offered to give you money.
Yeah.
So 3 days after his abduction, before any ransom was collected, Izaki was able to escape his captors after breaking free from the ropes they had tied him with and busted down a door of the isolated warehouse he was kept in. So he found 2 like random railroad employees that were able to help him contact the police.
Oh,
and by the way, he's not naked. The kidnappers gave him some clothes.
Okay, that's good. I was picturing him naked.
Just naked,
this whole
walking
time.
Around. Yeah. So he was still wearing those clothes that the kidnapper had given him. But he was unable to identify the culprits or provide the police with any clues as to their motivations. And this made the kidnappers angry.
Ooh, man. Don't get out of my warehouse.
So the next thing they do is demand $480,000, threatening to bust in Glico's warehouse and poison some of their candy with cyanide. And just to let them know that they weren't playing around, they busted in Glico's headquarters and set some of their property on fire. Just to let them know that they could.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
We have access.
Yeah. Then on April 16th, 1984, a plastic container full of hydrochloric acid was found inside a Glico company building in Ibaraki, Osaka. And that's the same city that Izaki was held captive in.
Okay. It's not a separate facility. It's the same one.
Same city, separate facility.
Oh, so they've got people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Covering the bases.
Mm-hmm. Despite a growing list of crimes, the police were at a complete loss as to whoever this was. And this was super embarrassing. So to give you an idea of how effective the Japanese police was in 1983, they solved 97.1% of murder cases.
Holy crap.
And 55.3% of thefts. The U.S. had... solved 73.5% of murder cases and 17.3% of thefts.
Oh, guys.
So that just shows you how much, like, how effective they were, right?
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So failing to get to the bottom of the Glico case was a black eye on the police's reputation. One newspaper, Yomiuri, ran an article that was titled "Fools" in all caps. Oh. !! We do not recall a case in which criminals have made such fools of the police.
Oh my, they're vicious.
Yeah. Unfortunately for the cops, their situation just got more and more embarrassing. But ironically, it seemed that the most frustrated group was the criminals themselves. What? They were like trying to help the police out. So on April 8th, the press received the first of what would be over 100 letters sent by the perpetrators over the next year and a half.
That puts the Zodiac Killer to shame.
Right? So the first letter starts, quote, "To the stupid police. Are you idiots? What are you doing with so many people? If you were pros, you would catch us. Because you guys have such a high handicap, we're going to give you some hints."
Oh, God.
Yeah. The letter proceeded to debunk a few theories, such as the kidnapping being an inside job or the owners of the warehouse that Izaki escaped from being involved. So the letter continued, "If you can't catch us after this much info, you guys are just thieves of the taxpayers' money. Should we kidnap the head of the police? Love, the monster with 21 faces."
They did not say love.
No, I don't think so.
I wish.
Love ya. Letters from the group continue to pour in. It seemed like they had a knack for getting the public's attention, and then they even leveraged the media to ensure that their crimes were accurately reported. So the letters often included random details, like the gate they used to enter the factory or the printer they used to print these letters.
This is crazy.
Yeah, but none of these clues provided in the notes went anywhere. So this caused the police to look more and more incompetent. Even the clues and evidence left behind at the crime scene couldn't provide any answers because they were either A, mass-produced, mm-hmm. or B, stolen. So they couldn't track down anything.
Okay.
Pretty much made it impossible.
Take a little, wet your whistle.
I don't want my mouth to get dry again. So, by June of that same year, everyone around Japan knew the monster with 21 faces. And actually, it was based off of a children's book titled The Mystery Man with 20 Faces.
Okay. I was going to say, like, is it the monster with 21 faces? Because there's 21 people, like, in yeah. their little crew?
I think that's what they were trying to, like,
allude to.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
But this book that they got their name off of, it's about a thief, quote unquote, stirring up the newspapers every day. And this oh. thief is so adept at disguises that they could be anyone. One excerpt from the story seemed particularly descriptive of the group targeting Glico. And it said, "Up until now, no matter how many police have been called up, they haven't been able to stop this dreadful gang." And this is from the book.
Yeah.
"There is one particularly strange feature of this game. When they have set their sights on one particular object or artifact without fail, they will send a letter of warning announcing their intentions, the date, place, and object of the planned crime. Even though they're criminals, perhaps they don't want to engage in an unfair battle, or perhaps they want to show that no matter how many precautions are taking, they can still commit the crime with their great skill."
Oh, that's totally them.
That's totally
them. That's what they think of themselves.
Yeah.
100%.
Uh-huh. So.
They're very cocky right now.
Yeah. By September 1984, another Japanese confectioner named Morianga, so this is like Glico's competitor, Morianga, mm-hmm. began to receive letters with unspecified threats if the sender did not receive $410,000.
Very specific amounts.
Right?
Yeah.
So according to the police, Morianga never sent the payment. And on October 8th, Japanese authorities received the following letter.
Is this in 1983, the same year?
1984.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a couple months later. So the letter says, quote, "To moms throughout Japan. In autumn, when appetites are strong, sweets are really delicious. When you think of sweets, no matter what you say, it's Morianga. We added a special flavor, the flavor of potassium cyanide. It's a little bitter, but it won't cause tooth decay, so buy the sweets for your kids. We have attached a notice on these better sweets that they contain poison. We put 20 boxes in stores from Hakata to Tokyo." And then that's it.
Oh my gosh.
So the same day, packages of cookies and candy found in grocery stores throughout Japan had typewritten labels that said danger-cyanide, exclamation mark. Yeah.
So this could be like just fucking with them.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we just printed a yes. box and said this, or it might actually contain that. So at any rate, nobody's going to buy this shit.
Exactly.
Right.
So in total, 18 packages were discovered and tested. One was found at a supermarket that was only 35 yards away from the house where Izaki was kidnapped from.
Mm-hmm.
While not all of the labeled boxes contained cyanide, at least one had enough to kill someone.
Oh my God.
Perhaps because of all the warnings, no one ever consumed the tainted candy. The letter warning of those tainted sweets, however, said that the next time they would contaminate 30 boxes. And over the next 2 weeks, it was reported that 40,000 officers staked out grocery stores across Japan.
Holy crap. But they're serious about this.
Oh, yeah. But the stakeouts yielded nothing. Though, thankfully, it doesn't appear that that group went through on their latest threat. So they didn't. They don't think that they poisoned 30 boxes.
Okay. You mean 30 boxes per store?
Just 30 random boxes from Hakata to Tokyo.
It's literally a needle in the haystack.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what the scary part was, right? So the police did, however, find a surveillance video from October 7th showing a suspect with permed hair, glasses, and a baseball hat placing something on the shelf where the poison candy was later found.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the camera sucked The lighting was poor, and the security tape hadn't been changed for over a year.
You know, it's always the security. You know, why can't
those damn
we just
security tapes
like fund a good like camera system? Like you know how the UK has that CCTV? They've had it for decades and decades and decades. Like, you can't go anywhere in the UK, and I'm sure in other parts of Europe, but I know I've read something about like how the UK has had CCTV, like mm-hmm. good cameras for a long, long time. Like, you can't go anywhere without being filmed.
Yeah. Well, and then also that negates the whole purpose of having a security camera. Right. Like, what's the point then?
It's almost can't like, even use it. It's like almost like they used it as a deterrent.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're on yep. camera.
Yeah.
Like, smile, you're on camera.
Yep. Jinx. Love it. So the quality of the image wasn't great, and no one was able to find anyone that matched this man in the video. So the video man was released to the public, but he was never found. And in addition to this grainy videotape, some phone calls reportedly placed by the monster were shown to the public.
Oh, they were recorded?
They were recorded and finally released to the public. But the weirdest thing of all, the voices on the tapes didn't sound like monsters, but of a woman and a young child.
What?
Isn't that creepy?
Ew, that's creepy. Do we have recordings of it?
I'll try and find one. It's going to be in Japanese, but right. I'll try and find it. Yeah.
Find it.
Yeah.
Do you think that they got like a woman and a child to like read? Like, I doubt like a woman and child would be a part of this
right?
whole team. Like,
but how creepy.
That's gross.
Hate it.
Children speaking is gross to me. Ugh. And singing.
Oof. Yeah.
No children's choirs at Christmas, please.
No, I hate it. I'm sorry. I feel the exact same way. Me and my parents, it's so funny. We used to like avoid going to church during the like kiddie mass because the songs are so annoying. I hate hearing them
terrible.
Sing.
I'm so, I know. It's
I mean, I have a child, so I can say that, right?
You don't want to hear Thomas sing a song no. for you?
Well, I don't know. I should delete this. But I totally agree.
There's nothing weird about recorded children's mm-hmm. voices and singing. It just mm-hmm. hits me wrong.
Right. Yeah. So the child is heard leaving instructions to leave money, quote, behind the seat of the bus stop bench. Behind the seat of the bus stop bench. Ugh. Ugh.
Which bus stop bench? There's a billion.
I don't know. Okay. A specific bus stop. Bench, okay, I would okay, think, they got right?
It. Okay.
Unless she's just a stupid kid.
Dumb ass
idiot.
Kid. You dumb loser. Specify.
So while the phone recordings never resulted in any arrest, it provoked the public to reconsider just who the monster with 21 faces was.
Mm-hmm.
So by March of 1985, 1 year after the first kidnapping, 31 food and candy companies had been harassed, and Japan's finest police force was still baffled with the case. They still had no idea.
Oh, gosh.
Sometimes the company being extorted would actually put together the money for the kidnappers, but the monster with 21 faces always refused to pick up the money, correctly assuming that the police would be waiting for them.
Huh.
Yeah.
So I guess money is irrelevant.
Yeah. In one instance, the monster with 21 faces instructed Glico representatives to wait for a phone call at a truck stop. Plain clothes policemen went instead. Duh. But no one ever came. And the next letter from the monster with 21 faces said, quote, "So you guys thought you could fool us? Dressed up in your nice businessman's loose suit, acting like salaryman? But we could tell immediately those shifty eyes gave you away." At every turn, the monster with 21 faces seemed a step ahead. On the flip side, according to police, the group never received any of the money demanded. On August 12th, 1985, a year and a half after the first kidnapping, the monster with 21 faces sent their last letter, and they announced that they would stop. So by this time, according to Japan's national police agencies, authorities have received over 28,000 tips and had used over 130,000 police officers.
That's Same.
Isn't that crazy? With a stack of letters, a laundry list of crimes, and a humiliated police agency, let's look at the theory surrounding who the monster with 21 faces could be.
Yes, I want to know.
So the first theory is that the monster with 21 faces was an inside job.
Mm-hmm.
And
even though they tried to refute it, but that could also be a red herring.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they thought that Izaki was in on it from the start.
Because he escaped out of the warehouse.
Mm-hmm. And
nobody got hurt or killed or
exactly.
anything. That was a little too clean of a kidnapping.
Yeah. Yeah. Very clean.
Agreed.
So this theory was popular at the very beginning of this crime wave and really stems from the disbelief that Katazuaki Izaki could escape his kidnappers. So there's never been any actual evidence to back this theory up, though some people find it suspicious that Moringa candy was poisoned and Glyco candy was only threatened to be poisoned.
Oh, okay. That's right. I think that's fishy as fuck.
Yeah. Casting doubt on this theory is the fact that even though no cyanide was ever found in Glyco's products, Glyco business was drastically affected by the entire situation.
So that wasn't a win.
Right.
Right.
All of Glyco products at one point were pulled from the shelves, forcing the company to shut down temporarily and lay off 2/3 of their part-time employees.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah.
That makes – if we have no hard clues and we just have to logically think about it, that there's no win.
There. Right. Exactly.
Even if they were trying to get rid of their competitor by actually poisoning their product – nobody's going to buy any of this stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't believe that one.
Oh, okay. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So the second theory is that the monster with 21 faces was someone seeking revenge on Japan's food companies. So this is really interesting. Almost 30 years before the monster with 21 faces sent their first letter, in mid-1955, a disabling agent in Morianga dried milk baby formula accidentally contained the poison arsenic. And by June 19th, 1956, 12,000 infants had been injured.
Oh, no.
And 138 had died. Moringa reached a settlement with the families of the affected infants.
Oof.
And in 1969, a report showed that the survivors of that continued to suffer related ailments by that time.
So you think it was a ailed baby
maybe
coming back for revenge?
Yep. By that time, the monster with 21 faces began its campaign. The victims of the dry milk incident would have been almost 30 years old.
Okay.
So they perhaps were ready to seek revenge on the company that made their life, their ailed earlier life,
revenge.
So difficult.
I get it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Baby revenge. But this theory doesn't account for why the monster with 21 faces targeted the entire industry instead of just Morianga.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know. But isn't that interesting?
That is
that
super
crazy?
Interesting.
So our final and best theory is that a man named Manaboy Miyazaki was at the very least somehow involved, right? So in November 1984, after the cyanide poisoning threats showed that the monster with 21 faces meant business, he demanded 100 million yen be sent over. So it was like a specific drop-off spot.
Mm-hmm.
And police who were watching the drop-off spot saw a quote-unquote fox-eyed man.
Fox-eyed? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Like shifty, sly?
I don't know what fox eyes look like. I mean, they sound pretty.
Crafty?
Yeah. Sound
crafty.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. So the suspect got away, but the police were able to find a stolen car that he had used with a police scanner inside.
Mm.
So in January, the police released a sketch of this quote unquote fox-eyed man. And this led to Manaboy Miyazaki. So this sketch looked so much like him that even Miyazaki's own mother called the police and said that it was him.
She ratted on her son.
Ratted out her own son. And Miyazaki was the son of a Yakuza boss.
Ooh.
And the Yakuza is like
the main mafia.
The mafia. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Japanese mafia. He was previously involved in anti-police actions and riots when he was in college, and he had already been arrested several times. While it appeared that the police had finally found their person, Miyazaki was never charged. He apparently had a rock-solid alibi, and no hard evidence ever turned up tying him back to the crime. Miyazaki went on to write a memoir detailing his life of crimes. Mm-hmm. The book titled Tappa Mono was released right after the statute of limitations for the monster
expired.
With 21 faces expired. And the cover of the book was that police sketch of the fox-eyed man.
Shut up. That's almost a confession.
I know.
It really is.
Yeah. So though he confessed to other crimes, Miyazaki never mentioned any involvement in the 21 Faces spree. The book went on to earn the known criminal over 100 million yen.
Yen. Oh, what
how ironic. So if this guy was in fact the monster with 21 faces, in the end, he got his money. But this case remains unsolved.
Okay, out of those three theories, I think it's that guy.
For sure.
Because if you look at, like, okay, Yakuza boss dad.
He's obviously protected.
Obviously protected.
For that alibi.
Resources, people.
Yep.
He wanted to make the police look like fools more than the money.
Yeah.
He never collected on the money until his book.
Right.
Was.
How ironic.
Yeah. But then the only question I have with that is, why candy companies? That's so fucking random.
Right?
But I think it's that guy.
For sure. I do too. I do like the thought of one of those babies coming back and seeking revenge.
That's like
my favorite.
Movie material.
Yeah.
That's my favorite for sure.
That is movie material.
It really
Should
is.
Make a movie?
The Revenge of the Baby. The Revenge of the Powdered Milk Poisoning Babies.
What a title. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got all your information that you need
right there,
from the title.
You know exactly what you're walking into in that movie theater.
That's so great.
I love that story, but I do think it's that guy.
I think it's that guy for sure.
The book coming out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah.
That was such
crazy,
a good one.
Right?
And you know there's still people in that police force that are like,
oh, and this is so interesting. I forgot to even mention this. The captain of the police at that time killed himself, committed suicide because he was so upset that they couldn't solve it. Like, that's how much
just
pressure was on them.
Just come over to the U.S. You'd be fine.
Yeah.
Like, ugh, got it, man. We don't know. It is what it is. It's over.
Only solving 17% of thefts.
That's
very
bad.
Low. Yeah. I mean,
so good.
That would give me motivation as a criminal, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Those are good.
Those were super good.
Okay. So.
Thanks for listening, you guys. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We always forget to say that.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah.
No, please. We forget, but.
Rate, review, and subscribe.
And honestly, like, we both manage our Instagram accounts and we look at every single like. Every single message, every single email, we're obsessed. We send screenshots of them. Mm-hmm. Like, we love hearing from you guys. And we had an awesome review on Apple, like, a couple of weeks ago. When
two.
We had been
two new ones.
Silent. So the fact that we're still getting feedback is just gold.
We love it so much.
We love it so, so much. But, yeah. Hopefully
send
you
us your
it.
Crazy story.
Please. And we will take them. Like, that's what we're doing our Halloween special on. Is
absolutely.
100% like reader involvement.
Love it.
Or reader, listener.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
It's okay.
We're not writing a book.
No.
Or a blog. Okay. Sorry. But anyways, we love you.
We love you. God bless. And trust no one. Bye.
Perfect. Oh my gosh. That was